Welcome into the Pewterplank Radio Network. I'm Josh Hill, joined as always by Patrick Nohi. And we're going to be talking about year-end awards, year-end celebrations, because the NFL season, it's over now. There's nothing else to watch until next August if you're into preseason football. And if you don't like the preseason, you're stuck until September, it looks like. So that's what we're going to be covering today. Patrick, how are you doing here now that football is over and we have, what, basketball, hockey, and baseball to look forward to?
Well, and pitchers and catchers don't report for a few weeks, so it's really just kind of hockey and basketball. And, you know, I even with a short season, don't ever feel like the basketball season really picks up until about a month before the playoffs are about to start. So this is sort of, to me, the sports wasteland. And as much as it was an exciting NFL season, it's sort of sad that, you know, you're going to turn on ESPN and try to watch some SportsCenter, and all they're going to have is, you know, some gossip and a bunch of hockey highlights for the next few weeks. So, you know, it's bittersweet, but it was certainly a good season. It was a great Super Bowl, and there's a lot of stuff to discuss with the Bucks.
We'll get into the Super Bowl and all the MVP trophies and Rookie of the Year awards that were given out. But let's start with the Bucks real quick. Is there anything really to talk about on the coaching front? Because really, that's all that there's been to talk about with the Buccaneers. And right now, I don't want to say I'm happy that we've hit a lull, but everything's kind of calmed down, it seems, and it's really not as intense as it was when we were searching for a head coach. What's on the front now?
It's interesting today because Alex Marvez came out with a tweet earlier that said that the Bucs' entire coaching staff is basically solidified or about to be solidified, which was news to pretty much everyone that kind of covers the Bucs because it seems to have happened pretty quietly. But the coordinators do seem to, there's mystery there still. The two names that were mentioned by Marvez earlier today were Bill Lazor, who is the offensive coordinator currently at the University of Virginia, as well as Ron Turner, who he was the offensive coordinator with the Chicago Bears for several years, over two stints as the coach of Illinois for a little while as well, and he's been with the Colts the last couple of years. Neither of which are especially exciting candidates per se, but, you know, right now, if you're a Bucs fan, I think no news is almost good news with some of the names that are beginning to circulate, because I really do, as we talked about, I feel like they're beginning to scrape the bottom of the barrel. Ron Turner is not a good name for an offensive coordinator to begin with. I mean, that's not the kind of guy you want to bring in to support Greg Schiano. It's just becoming somewhat frightening from the perspective of a fan to be watching the way that the organization is going through some of this coaching search and some of the names that they're beginning to push out there, because you really aren't getting some of the best and the brightest anymore. You're just beginning to get retreads. You're beginning to get some guys that haven't proven anything at an NFL level, and it'll be kind of a gamble. It feels like you're kind of cobbling together a coaching staff with duct tape and super glue as opposed to building a strong one from the ground up, which was kind of the line that they've been feeding us. So, I don't know. It sort of seems like they're talking out of both sides of their mouth right now in Tampa, and I don't know. I'm not exactly excited about the direction the coaching search seems to be headed, even without having concrete names quite yet.
Yeah, it definitely seems like we're in the bargain bin section of the dollar store when it comes to finding head coaches or coordinators to come and assist Schiano, who actually is looking like not too bad of a guy considering all the other names that are surrounding him. It's kind of like, oh, Schiano, yeah, that's, we know who he is. But whether or not that's a good thing just because of the names surrounding him, we'll find out. We've seen coaching staffs that aren't full of all-stars succeed before, hopefully. I mean, at this point, you really just have to cross your fingers and hope that the Glazers and Mark Domnick know what they're doing, because they're really kind of masking everything that would lead to us having confidence in them, wouldn't you say?
I think so, yes. I think that there's definitely some questions that the fan base can raise as the way that this entire search has been conducted. And, you know, it's just, for instance, with a coach like Schiano, who has limited NFL experience and has never been a head coach at the NFL level, you know, that's one of the things that we talked about on the site, we talked about on this radio network before, is, you know, you want to have a guy who has some NFL experience so that you don't have to coach the coaches. You know, you don't want to have to worry about the direction that your coaches are going to be going in team meetings. You don't want to worry about having to make sure that they're on the same page as you, that they know what to expect from the NFL, you know? And Ron Turner, obviously, has been an offensive coordinator, but he hasn't been a successful offensive coordinator. And you'll get people people who will, you know, and I'm picking on Ron Turner, but he's the most notable of the names being mentioned as an offensive coordinator right now. But you you don't want to pick on him too much because he's the only name that's really been mentioned as a really concrete example. I don't really buy as much into the Virginia coordinator coming up here. I think he's way too inexperienced. But Turner, for instance, I mean, it's easy for Bucks fans to buy into the silver lining that the Glazers and Dominic will put around that hire if he's the guy. You know, he had the number two offense in all of football in 2006 when the Bears went to the Super Bowl. And that's true, but he had a first-round quarterback that everyone was excited about that never developed. I mean, Rex Grossman is now considered by some a bust. He really never amounted to a whole lot in Chicago where he had Ron Turner kind of overseeing a lot of that. Kyle Orton was really never a great quarterback in Chicago. He became much better when he was working with Josh McDaniels over in Denver. There's just not a whole lot outside of 1 year where he had the number two offense in football to hang your hat on with a candidate like that. And it's just the thing that really scares me is the knock I've heard on Greg Schiano is that he's a boring play caller. He's boring in terms of the way he runs his team. He's very conservative. And a lot of people have pointed a finger to Dave Wannstedt, who he worked under in the NFL, and said he's just like Dave Wannstedt with the way he runs an offense. Well, Dave Wannstedt's offensive coordinator was Ron Turner. So right there, you're sort of playing into that. I don't see why that's a good thing. I don't see how that sort of an offensive style is going to help your quarterback. I just don't know that the reasons they're making these choices are necessarily the right reasons. And it just scares me a little bit because these are the men that are going to have to run this team. These are the men that are going to have to develop these players. These are the guys that you're entrusting this organization to for the next 2-3 years, and there's not a great track record of success there to be trusting them with. And that to me seems like it would be paramount and higher, but apparently that's secondary to the Bucks.
He's a boring play caller, so that means we don't get any exciting end-arounds to Aurelius Ben this season?
Yes. If I never see another end-around in Tampa again, I think I would be completely okay with that. There's a lot of interesting things I thought the Bucks could have done with their offense last year, but you really hit the nail on the head. I mean, that was about as exciting as they got, and that's about as exciting as you can expect a Ron Turner run offense to get. I mean, it's going to be a very vanilla, very drop back, play action oriented kind of offense. And, you know, it's like we talked about before, Josh Freeman has a skill set that might be a little more better suited to a spread out offense, a little bit more up tempo, trying to do some things that are not really in Ron Turner's wheelhouse. And, you know, it gives me considerable tension when I think about the fact that Josh Freeman is really the franchise. You have to have him develop and his potential for the Bucks to have any chance of accomplishing their goals over the course of the next 5-10 years. And Ron Turner's not the guy that's going to get in there. I mean, I can just feel comfortable saying that. If Ron Turner is the guy that's going to coach Josh Freeman, you better pray that you've got a miracle worker as a quarterback coach, or I think Josh Freeman is not going to amount to what we're hoping he will.
Marvez also said that Schiano is about to hire three of his former assistants from Rutgers, his linebackers coach, his tight ends coach, and his assistant defensive backs coach. Any of those guys intrigue you at all, or are these just kind of like we said, hiring them because there's really nothing else out there?
I find that interesting. I mean, I'm not going to sit there and say, oh, you know, he's bringing all his own guys. That's necessarily a bad thing, because I think that level of continuity can be a good thing. And, you know, you go back and you look at some of the early staffs that Bill Belichick worked on, and you'll see some common names that later on came on to serve under him as a head coach. You know, Romeo Crennel, you know, you'll see Charlie Weiss. You'll see all kinds of different names, you know, in New York, you know, in New England. Before he was ever a head coach, that, you know, he's worked with those guys. He's comfortable with those guys. He's got a good rapport with those guys, and he knows what he can expect them to teach and what he can expect out of them as coaches. And maybe that's the way that Schiano's operating. I mean, obviously, him and Belichick seem to operate similarly. That was one of the things Belichick raved about him when the Bucks made the hire. He's a very bright guy. He's going to be a good NFL coach. So maybe that is something that, you know, is going to be a positive. It just, as you kind of alluded to, the way this coaching search has gone, you kind of aren't really looking to give the Bucks too much of the benefit of the doubt anymore. You're not really sitting there thinking, oh, you know, these guys, you know, they're making all the right moves. So, yeah, it might be the right move, but based on the precedents that have been set over the course of this search, it's not going to look that way. So, you know, I'm going to say there's an incomplete grade on that. I don't really know yet. I don't know enough about those coaches to, you know, definitively say, oh, that's a good hire, that's a bad hire. But I know that the way things have been going and the way everything looks, it's easy to find fault with it. And that's unfortunate because you'd like to be able to give your organization the benefit of the doubt.
Before we shift into general NFL end of the year stuff, let's talk quickly about some upcoming free agents that the Buccaneers have. Because as you and me have discussed numerous times in the past, the Glazers have a lot of money to spend because the NFL is telling them to spend that. But they tend to stay in-house and use that money by extending contracts. And now you have a list of 12 unrestricted free agents. Do you see any of these guys coming back? I mean, right off the top of the list, I mean, Rondé Barber is a guy who doesn't have a contract right now. Do you see the Glazers or the Buccaneers bringing him back? Or is this going to be a situation where when the regime changed to from John Gruden to Raheem Morris, they kind of cut all the veterans loose, including guys like Derek Brooks, who had given their sweat and blood to this organization and really built it up and really made the Glazers seem like legitimate owners, and they just kind of tossed him to the side. Is that going to be the kind of exit that Rondé Barber has with the Buccaneers?
You know, I don't know. I'd like to say, and if I were running the organization, Rondé Barber could come back and play again if he wanted to play. He's kind of got that emeritus status where as long as he's still able to put himself on the field and be competitive, he always has a spot in Tampa. But, you know, I don't think that's the way the NFL operates. That's obviously what I just said, an incredibly sentimental viewpoint. So, no, I don't know. I think the jury's out. I think if Greg Schiano wants a veteran who has been there, has been through different coaches, who is a calming presence in the back of that defense, I think that that would be a good guy to bring back. I don't think he's going to be demanding top dollar. But, you know, I could see a scenario where the Bucks just say, hey, you know, we got to go a different direction. It's a new regime, and thank you for your service, but this is it. That would be really unfortunate. I think that would be sad, but that's the NFL. And, you know, as everyone says, you hear it 50 times when you turn on NFL Network or ESPN, it's a business. You can't take it personally. So, you know, I don't know. I'd like to see him back, but I don't necessarily think he will be.
Two other guys that have expiring contracts are Preston Parker and Michael Spurlock. Now, because of Michael Spurlock's injury earlier in the season, Preston Parker really had a chance to step up and really kind of became a slot receiver that Josh Freeman really liked to go to. Now that they both have expiring contracts, do you see the Bucs bringing them both back, or do you see them bringing back Parker over Spurlock, or does Spurlock come back strictly as like a return guy?
I believe, and I'm not 100% on this, but I believe that the Bucs will retain rights to Preston Parker. I don't think that he will be able to just be an unrestricted free agent. I think that they'll at least have a restricted free agency with him. They might have exclusive rights. So I think that Preston Parker is a good shot to be back, and I think he deserves to be back. He's got a very interesting skill set. I think he could turn into a good slot receiver. I think he could learn to do some other things. He's clearly good on special teams. And, you know, he did show some things last year when he needed to step up for the Bucs. He was one of those players that, you know, you could potentially circle him and say, oh, that was a small bright spot during a very dark season for the Buccaneers. I think Spurlock's probably done. And that's a shame to me because, obviously, there's some history there. But, you know, I think that what Spurlock does at this point in his career, what his skill set is, you can get that for cheaper from a younger player. And I just don't know that they're going to be able to say, oh, you know, I can justify keeping him when we've got all these other young players that can do the same thing, but might have a higher ceiling than Spurlock. So I think Spurlock might be one of those guys that moves on, you know, latches on somewhere else. He'll have a job this week because he can return kicks. But I think Preston Parker probably will have pushed him off the roster if it's a choice between the two of them.
Parker, the Buccaneers do have exclusive rights on Preston Parker and one other player, LeGarrette Blount. He has exclusive rights, but his other mate in the backfield, Ernest Graham, is an unrestricted free agent. Is this a situation where the Buccaneers move away from Graham and take a guy in the draft who can basically do what Graham does?
Well, let me pose a question to you. Do you trust the Bucs if they don't re-sign Graham to have enough, you know, good running backs on the roster the entire season to make it all the way through? Because that was really the problem the Bucs ran into last year. They lost Graham, and they just had nothing at all behind LeGarrette Blount at that point. I mean, they didn't have anybody that could do what Graham needed to do. I think it's a risky proposition to say, oh, yeah, we're not going to bring back Graham because so far in a couple of years, the Bucs have not been able to replace him. I mean, what he does is invaluable. He's a jack-of-all-trades. You can put him in there at fullback if you need to. He can take some carries. He's good at pass protection. He's good out in the flats. I think that, you know, the guy that I compare him to all the time, and I don't think it's a bad comparison, is Kevin Falk for the New England Patriots. He's just kind of that, you know, guy that wears many hats. He's never going to have great statistics, but he seem valuable to that offense. And I think that's really what the Bucks learned last year, is just how valuable Ernest Graham is. You know, it's nice to have that back who can go and do all the things you need him to do, who can spell your running back, come on a third, you know, spell your starting running back, come on third downs, and, you know, be good in the pass game. There's a lot of things that Ernest Graham brings to the table, and until the Bucks have a replacement in hand, I don't think they should let him go.
Yeah, Graham is another guy that I think they can bring back who is a veteran that, even though his age would say that maybe the Bucks would move away from him, like you said, he's a jack-of-all-trades, and he really needs to be retained. They need to bring him back, give him at least another year to come back, and because, you know, he's invaluable. Especially after the Chicago Bear game in London. I think the Buccaneers should have like 12 or 13 running backs on roster at all time after that debacle. But, I mean, they're not really in a position to be cutting running backs at this point. But, yeah, like you said, Graham, jack of all trades, he needs to come back. And he really complements Blunt well. If Blunt can't take all the carries for a game, Ernest Graham really proved last year that he can come in. And despite his age, despite all the flack that he's gotten, despite the fact he's never going to be an every-down running back, he comes and he gets the job done, and he's very, very, you know, he's complacent with what he can, with what his position in the NFL is. He's very, he knows what his role is, and I think a guy that knows he's going to come in and he's going to be basically like a utility player, that's something valuable to have, and I think he really needs to be brought back. So I do agree with you on that point.
Yeah, well, it's tough because Ernest Graham, like, he's I think, a fan favorite. He obviously, I mean, he lives football. He gives everything he has to the Bucs. I don't think that there's a player you can look at the Bucs and say he gives more on a regular basis than what Ernest Graham does. But, and this is going to sound cold, calculating, like Bill Belichick cutting a player the night before the Super Bowl, I would love to replace Ernest Graham. I really would, because there's nothing he does that he's exceptional at. I mean, there's no facet of Ernest Graham's game that you sit there and go, wow, you can't live without that. It's just he does so many things, and he's so good at those. But, you know, he's so good at having multiple skills, not necessarily any one particular one, but just being well-rounded, that you can't afford to get rid of him. I mean, you know, you mentioned he's a good complement to LeGarrette Blunt. There are much better complements to LeGarrette Blunt. I would love to get a speed back who's a home run threat that you can just put in and have a thunder and lightning kind of duo.
Mm.
Graham is not that, but he's consistent. He's steady. He's solid. It's funny because you don't want to say, like, oh, you begrudge having him, but Ernest Graham represents, to me, some of the Bucs' utility in picking up superstar players. He's the everyman. He's good at doing everything. He's not exceptional at doing anything. And you'd love to have somebody necessarily better, but it's like it's tough to find that guy. I guess in that sense, he's underrated because, you know, as much as you'd like to have somebody, per se, sexier on the roster, it's tough to beat Ernest Graham. He does a lot for you.
Another guy on the free agent list that we talked about earlier this season, Josh Johnson, expiring contract, the backup to Josh Freeman. Do the Bucks bring him back, or what are they going to do with Josh Freeman, who is a very athletic player, who can very much go to another team, be a backup, and maybe even be a starter on some teams who really want to maybe gamble and take a chance on him? Do the Bucks bring him back, or if the asking price is too high, do they just say, sorry, but we can get somebody else in the draft or free agency or off the practice squad?
No, I think the price is going to be too high. I mean, Josh Johnson knows he's got an opportunity to kind of do what Tavares Jackson did this year, which is, you know, sign a nice contract and then go get himself into a starting quarterback battle at another team. You know, I think he was probably hoping that Alex Smith bombed in San Francisco this year so that he could go back up with Harbaugh and have an opportunity to run that offense. But unfortunately for Johnson, that didn't really go down. So I don't know that San Francisco is going to be a good landing pad for him. But mark my words, somebody will get a little bit, I want to say, infatuated with some of his skill set, some of his athletic ability, the speed he brings, the arm he has. And I think they'll overpay. And, you know, it just, as much as it's nice for the Bucs to have a guy like that to back up Freeman, they just really can't afford to continue to have him like that. He's got too high a ceiling to be a lifetime backup quarterback. So I think he'll be gone. I wish him the best. You know, it's interesting if they hadn't drafted Freeman. I mean, there's no telling what he could have become in Tampa if he'd been given opportunity and supported the right way, kind of like they'd given Freeman. But you know, I think he'll be on his way out, and I think he might surprise some people. I think he could challenge for a starting job somewhere in the NFL.
Tampa Bay has four members of their defensive secondary on the unrestricted free agent list, including Rondae Barber. The other guys are Sean Jones, Corey Lynch and Albert Mack. Do any of those guys return, or do the Buccaneers maybe move in a different direction in the secondary, which could very well, they could patch up in the draft?
Well, I think that's two questions. Do the Bucs re-sign anybody? Yeah, I think they'll re-sign a couple players out of that secondary. Should they re-sign anybody? No. I think that they should just let them all walk, with the exception of Rodney, and take your chances somewhere else. I've never really been that impressed with Mac, although I know he's still developing. He still, you know, has a ways to go. Sean Jones, I think you pretty much know what you're going to get from him now. I don't know that that's really what you want to be settling on at safety. And then, you know, I think the Bucs just need to look at that secondary and overhaul it. I think that's really what they need to spend a lot of time on. I double down in the draft. You've seen all of them play. You know what all of them are capable of. And, you know, unless they dramatically change the way they play defense in Tampa, I don't think any of them have the skill sets it takes to really be successful there.
I have to agree with you on that one, just because the secondary wasn't anything special. But the dangerous part about that is basically every part of that secondary needs to be rebuilt. There's questions about Barber coming back. There's questions about Aqib Talib, how valuable he is to this team. If the Buccaneers do decide to let these guys walk, which we both agree they should, what is that going to do to the secondary? I mean, because basically it's going to be wiped clean. And are fans going to be able to handle the fact that the entire defense has to be retooled, basically? Because, I mean, there's even questions about the linebackers. I mean, Geno Hayes is an unrestricted free agent. What's going to happen with the secondary if they do indeed let everybody walk? I mean, we've talked about Claiborne taking some guys in the draft, but how long is it going to take for this secondary to be good, if it even ever will be?
Well, I guess there's two schools of thought on that. I mean, could come at it from a complete different perspective than what you and I have shared on this, which is that maybe the secondary isn't quite as bad as everyone thought it was last year. Maybe the front seven was just so terrible and got so little pressure that any secondary would have struggled in those types of circumstances, because you can't make excuses for that Bucs front seven. They were amongst the worst in football in that front seven. I mean, they were dead last against the run. They gave up, I think they were 30th in points. I mean, they were just terrible defensively, especially that front seven. And if you don't have good play from your front seven, that secondary is going to be in all kinds of trouble. And I mean, you know, a player like Aqib Talib, as much as he had some off-the-field turmoil last season, he still didn't have a good year. And some of that could definitely be contributed to the fact that he had no help as far as pressure from the front seven. They weren't really doing a lot to disguise the defense. And it's not like he had a bunch of good battery mates to really be relying on back there. So, you know, you could make an argument that maybe the secondary wasn't quite as bad as it looked in 2011. But at the same time, I think that, you know, where there's smoke, there typically is some fire. I think there are some serious issues in that secondary. Maybe not so much with, you know, your Talibs. Maybe once you get, you know, Grimm back, he'll be serviceable again. But you definitely need to add some depth there. You need to have, in my opinion, really a true number two corner, because Rodney Barber, as good as he is, I'm not sure that he's really going to be able to play the boundary. And they decide not to go with a cover two and ask him to run more man. That's really not his skill set. So, you know, as far as secondary goes, I might change his beginning to think. I might still try to hang on to Talib, draft his replacement so that you can leverage him to act better. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, try to bring in a little bit of depth and hope to just fix it that way for the year and see what you've got with an improved front seven. Because if you really think that it was the front seven more so than the secondary, then you might want to work on fixing that first and then addressing the secondary, use the pun, secondarily.
But we both agree that Sean Jones really isn't the future safety here in Tampa. A guy that was in the running, really, for the job in the preseason was Ahmad Black. He was cut, signed to the practice squad. Does he get another chance here this offseason to try to prove that he can be a part of the active roster?
I'm as intrigued by Ahmad Black as I am. He's 5'9", and, you know, I never really felt that undersized safeties perform all that well in the NFL. The only guy I can really think of who was undersized and really had a good career was Bob Sanders, and that really was kind of, his undersized was a detriment because he was always hurt. So, you know, at 5'9", and I don't even really buy his 5'9", I'm sure he's actually 5'8". I just don't know that that's tall enough, even with a pretty good amount of athleticism. So, you know, I think just from a size standpoint, he might not be a good fit. And then, you know, if he had been, like, this is what I tell people all the time. if he had been the guy last year, he would have been playing last year, you know? Like, if he were better than Sean Jones, he would have been on the field. So I just think that, you know, I wouldn't count too much on Ahmad Black. I don't necessarily know that he's going to turn into the superstar that all the Gators fans hope he will be. I think that he had a good college career and all of it hangs hat on that, but I'm just not sure he's got an NFL body type or really he's going to be the answer at safety for the Bucs.
Let's move away from the Buccaneers now, because we've talked about basically really all there is to talk about.
We're about to vomit. We've been talking about them so much.
Let's move into some happier things, because there is a Super Bowl on Sunday, and the New York Giants shocked the world yet again, although this time it wasn't as shocking. It was almost, a lot of people were actually expecting this to happen, but they beat the New England Patriots yet again. Eli Manning, two Super Bowl MVPs, two Super Bowl trophies. Is he finally out of Peyton's shadow? Because I believe he is. What do you think, Patrick?
Oh, I think he definitely is. I think he definitely is. That was about as strong a performance down the stretch as he could have had. I mean, that pass to Manningham, you know, the big knock on him during the first Super Bowl was that there was a considerable amount of luck involved in the David Tyree catch. Well, that Manningham catch, I mean, that's about as textbook and as beautiful you know, that's as good as an NFL throw and an NFL catch can get, and it comes, you know, at one of the biggest moments on the biggest stage in the game. So, you know, I think that right there you could sit there and say, okay, Eli is legit. He's an elite quarterback. And as far as whether he surpassed his brother, I think you have to kind of make it into categories. I mean, you know, obviously Peyton's got the regular season numbers. He's more prolific in terms of the stats he's put up. But, you know, when you got them both with their backs up against the wall and 2 minutes left and the ball in their hands in the fourth quarter, I don't think it's a very easy case to make anymore that it's Peyton and not Eli, especially considering the last time Peyton found himself in that situation in a Super Bowl, he threw a game-ending interception. You know, it's a pretty big difference considering that you've got similar situations, and one totally fell on his face and one, you know, game-winning touchdown drive. So I think Eli Manning definitely hats off to him. I don't know, it's totally clear-cut that he's better than Peyton, but, you know, we were having a fun conversation after the Super Bowl that if Eli retired tomorrow, do you think he could beat his brother at the Hall of Fame?
Now, that's something that could spark a lot of debate and a lot of controversy in certain markets in Indianapolis and New York. I don't know if we're quite there yet to say that he would beat Peyton to the Hall of Fame. But, you know, the question of whether or not they'll both make it to the Hall of Fame is very quickly being answered. And I think before the Super Bowl and before really this season, people were still kind of on the fence about Eli, which I found kind of very unfair to him, because he's accomplished quite a lot in a lot shorter time than Peyton did. So after this Sunday, I really think that the question of whether or not they'll both be in the Hall of Fame is starting to get a definitive answer of yes, they both will be. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Archie's going to need to probably get a condo in Canton, because he's going to be there a lot in the next 10 years. You know, I totally agree with you. I think Eli definitely punched his ticket to the Hall. You know, it's interesting because they've taken such dramatically different career paths. I mean, obviously Peyton, you know, he stayed at Tennessee the extra year, you know, tried to win the national title, and I think he won all the good guy points for that. He's been in Indianapolis his entire career. He's, you know, never going to throw anybody under the bus. He's always seemingly positive. He's always got, you know, a good spin on it. He's got a good personality. Everyone likes Peyton Manning. You know, it just, you can't not like him. You see him playing ping pong with Justin Timberlake in a Sony commercial, and you just go, oh, he seems like a good guy. You know, Eli was kind of prickly at the beginning of his career, and I don't think that was necessarily him as much as it might have been Archie. But when you come into the league, you've never played it down, and you tell the team that's drafting you, I'm not going to play for you unless you trade me, that's not really a good foot to start on. And especially when you get traded to a market like New York, they're going to be on your back the second you get there, because they didn't just get, you know, they didn't just pick Eli. They gave up a whole lot of things, so draft picks for Eli. You know, I think they gave up a package of like 3 or 4 picks, including the 4th overall pick, which was Philip Rivers, and, you know, a few other things. So it's not like Eli came cheap. So obviously the expectations were higher, and I think New Yorkers were probably sitting there saying, you know, we could have had a good quarterback at 4 without having to give up an arm and a leg for Eli Manning, so this kid really better be worth it. But I give him a lot of credit because he's proved he is. I mean, he kind of called his own shot at the beginning of this year. He said, I'm elite, and then he went out and he won a Super Bowl MVP. So, you know, I think that you got to give him credit because even if they took a different route to get there, they both proved that they are the quarterbacks you drafted. And, you know, Eli has, I think, definitely been through a lot more adversity than Peyton has. So, you know, who has a thicker skin? I think you got to give that nod to Eli.
As we talk about two quarterbacks that are very elite quarterbacks now in Eli and Peyton, even though Peyton really didn't do anything this Sunday other than get into drama, Brett Favre-like drama, we have to talk about Tom Brady. Before this Sunday, he was the exact opposite of Eli Manning. Tom Brady was the elite quarterback. If it comes down to the last 2 minutes of a football game, you're going to want Tom Brady to be in charge of your football team, to be the general, to be the quarterback. And it came down to that, and Tom Brady failed. He came very close to Rob Gronkowski came very, very, very close to catching that miraculous catch in the end zone. But it didn't happen, and now Tom Brady hasn't won a Super Bowl in a very long time. He's turning 35 this offseason. Is it finally time to say Tom Brady has peaked and that he's never going to be the quarterback that he was at the height of the Patriots dynasty?
I don't know if that is fair, honestly, because I don't think Tom Brady had much to apologize for in that Super Bowl. I mean, his stats are almost identical to Eli's. He did throw that pick to Chase Blackburn, which, you know, a lot of people will say that was Gronkowski not being healthy. I think that was a bad throw. He underthrew the ball. Blackburn had perfect position. That's not Brady. But I will say this. Brady didn't fail as much on that last drive as some of his receivers failed him. I mean, you know, Giselle obviously came out and said it, and it'll be a big to-do for a couple weeks because football's over and what else are they going to talk about? But, you know, he can't both throw and catch it, as she said. And she's actually right, and a lot more concise than the guys that talked about it for 3 hours on ESPN after the game. You can't have a quarterback going to win games if his receivers are dropping passes in money time. And that's what happened. He had Aaron Hernandez drop a ball. Deion Branch got his hands on a tipped ball, but he still had a shot at it. He couldn't bring it in. Wes Welker, it wasn't a great throw by Brady, but it hit him in both hands, and that's one of the first things they teach you is that if it hits you in the hands as a receiver, you're supposed to bring it in. I mean, those are some pretty key drops and key moments. And if he just gets one of those completions, totally different ballgame. So, you know, I'm not going to sit there and say Tom Brady is on the way down. He probably has peaked. I mean, you know, he won 3 Super Bowls in, 4 years? I don't think you're going to ever top that. I think he probably knew that himself. But I don't think that his level of play has diminished to the point where it's time to take him out of that top 3 quarterbacks in the NFL. He certainly still deserves to be there. He's still, in my opinion, arguably the best quarterback in the NFL. And, you know, not having it work out for you at the end of a ball game, there's a lot of components that have to go right for the game-winning drive to occur. I mean, you know, it would have been hard for Manningham to drop that pass, and then the Patriots end up winning the game, and it's a totally different conversation. We're saying, well, Eli couldn't make the throw. You know, it's highly subjective. I think that, you know, Brady is still the quarterback that we all declare him to be. I don't think he's overhyped yet, but, you know, it will be interesting to see how this offseason affects him because, you know, I'm sure that this is going to stay with him, and you know, I could see it going one of two ways. He could rededicate himself and come away more motivated than ever, or he could sit there and just realize, you know what? I've won 3 Super Bowls. I've been in 5. I'm having a Hall of Fame career, and I'm married to the most gorgeous woman on earth. I've had a good career, and if that's what he decides to do and rest on his laurels a little bit, then yeah, I think, you know, you will be able to say, okay, now he has peaked. He's on his way back down. But, you know, that remains to be seen until the first few games of next year as to how Brady responds to this.
In terms of his response, are we going to see more of a Tom Brady that we saw in that Washington Redskins game where he's yelling, he's profane, he's very frustrated? Now that Josh McDaniels is back, is that going to restore some kind of calm in New England? Or because of, like we've said, his receivers failed him down the stretch, are we going to see a more aggravated, more frustrated, less calm Tom Brady on the sideline because things aren't going his way, because New England all of a sudden now isn't the most elite, best team in the NFL in the eyes of some people? Or, you know, is it just going to be business as usual? This happens, like you said, he's Tom Brady. Nobody's going to shed a whole lot of tears for a guy who's married to a supermodel and is set for life.
It's going to be interesting. I have a feeling we're going to see the same Brady as always. I mean, you know, Brady, I always feel, is a little bit schizophrenic, multiple personalities at times, because you're right, sometimes he seems very, relaxed, very poised, you know, nothing's going to faze him, and then you'll see him in a game that seems to really mean something, and he's as fiery as they come. So, you know, I don't know that we're going to see a huge difference, and I don't even know that we'll necessarily see a drop-off. I just, you know with how competitive he is, he's not going to get over the Super Bowl anytime soon. So I'm interested to see how he's going to bounce back next year. I think that he's going to have a great season. I just there's a lot of other questions on that Patriots team that they kind of got away with this year, and if they don't address this offseason, they're not going to get away with next year. And I mean the defense more than anything. And they had a good Super Bowl. They were able to do some good things. But week in and week out, that defense got beat this NFL season. And, it's not like Brady's getting any younger. So they are going to have to do some things on the other side of the ball to balance things out, because right now they're an unbalanced team. It's very offensively oriented, and they just kind of have a defense that, as they said themselves, it has to make good situational plays, but it's not going to beat you top to bottom. And they need to really improve that, or it's not going to matter how well Brady bounces back. They're not going to get back to another Super Bowl.
I read this online the other day, and I had to laugh at it because some people might see this as true, especially in the Boston, Massachusetts area. Is Giselle the Yoko Ono to the New England Patriots? Is she breaking up the band? Is that the reason Tom Brady? It's funny to fathom that somebody can actually. I hope it was very satirical to say that she's the Yoko Ono to the New England Patriots. But any commentary on that? Because anytime we can talk about a supermodel, I think I can take a couple minutes out of my day to do that.
Yeah, I got a couple minutes for that too. He hasn't won anything since he married her, so, she might be a bad jinx, but no, I think that that's just overblown, and it's unfortunate that we live in kind of the TMZ era where everyone's got a camera phone and it's always rolling 24/7 because you don't ever seem to get a private moment where you can just make a comment to somebody without it being all over the internet. I think that's unfortunate, but at the same time, if I'm Tom Brady, I'm pretty proud of my wife, like, she's sticking up for you, she clearly knows what happened, she's passionate about your job. I mean, I can't tell you, I'm sure there are other football players that, even though they don't appreciate the fact she made the comments and that they went public, can still sit there and go, you picked the winner, Tom. I mean, that's impressive. She's gorgeous, she sticks up for you, she knows her X's and O's, good for her, but, No, I think that's overblown. I think that's just, Boston needs something to write about, and that city, more than any other city in America, when something goes wrong with one of their teams, the sky is falling and the world is over, even though they've won more titles than any city ever in the last decade. But, it's just, that's Boston for you.
Back to the Giants, because they won the Super Bowl.
Real quick, because, we were on the Manning thing, and I meant to ask you this question a couple questions ago, but I'm interested in your take, because, I read the New York Post, for instance, had an article, I think it was Piggy Payton trying to steal Eli's big day or something like that. And, obviously, New York Post has no problem with the biased headlines, but, that was kind of a sentiment that a lot of people had, that, Payton's kind of overshadowing the Super Bowl, he's doing the Brett Favre thing, and, I can't believe that now we got to deal with this with Payton. The thing that bothers me about this, and I'm interested in your take, and nobody has said this. I haven't heard anyone at ESPN say it. I haven't heard anyone on NFL Network say it. I haven't heard it anywhere. Jim Irsay was the guy that, before the CBA was reneged on last year by the owners, was absolutely adamant that he had to make Peyton Manning the highest-paid quarterback in football. And Peyton even said, let's take our time on this. But Irsay said, no, we got to do this. This is as important to the franchise as it is to you. And they inked him to this monster deal. And now Peyton is the one who's kind of being made into the bad guy because he's not healthy and he's got this $28 million bonus and it kept coming up over Indianapolis. But nobody holds Jim Irsay accountable for the fact that he made a terrible business decision. Just a terrible business decision. Mm-hmm. Nobody holds him accountable for it. What's your opinion on that? I mean, if this were the Glazers, we would be all over this. We would be talking about bad ownership. Why is nobody on Jim Irsay and saying, hey, that's a bad move you made?
Well, I think if this would be any other quarterback other than Peyton Manning, we'd be talking about it. But because, even when we were talking about Brett Favre, it was all about Ted Thompson and he's doing this wrong and he was really the bad guy in this. But I think something happened in the lockout where now the players are being held accountable for their actions because they were equally responsible for the lockout as the owners were. And now I think there is a backlash towards the players that you guys, especially when it's $28 million, that if you're going to, you're going to be blessed with this kind of money, if someone's going to give you this kind of money, don't complain about it, this and that, especially with the economic times we live in and people losing their houses and stuff like that. It's really hard for people, I think, to shed a tear for a guy who is or isn't going to get a $28 million bonus when he's going to get a multi-million dollar contract somewhere else. But in terms of Jim Irsay, it is bad ownership. When you were saying about all of the bad business that Irsay is doing with Manning, and I keep thinking of Dan Gilbert and the Cleveland Cavaliers and how he just makes bad business decision after bad business decision and then expects to be bailed out with it. I think Irsay is going to be the bad guy at some point in this. Because Eli Manning's in the Super Bowl, because it's his hour, I think it's really going to... I think people are really trying to generate a story, maybe like a sibling rivalry that's not really there. In good time, Irsay is going to be the bad guy in this. Because at the end of the day, he signs the checks. He's the one that gives the okays on everything. And if it comes down to it, he's going to be the one that cuts one of the best quarterbacks in NFL history from his football team. So I think I agree with you 100% that he needs to be held accountable for this. Irsay needs to be held accountable for this. I just don't think that people are ready to hold him accountable for it just because, you know, it's Peyton Manning and maybe it's the people that haven't liked Manning throughout his entire career finally have a window of opportunity to, you know, jab him with the poker. But give it time, Irsay is going to be the bad guy in this because, like you said, he needs to be held accountable for this. And maybe it'll start here where people need to start holding him accountable. But, like, yeah, I agree with you. That needs to happen, yes.
Well, and you made a good point because you were talking about the Packers. And when it was the Packers, it was Ted Thompson. And granted, they have a much different ownership situation with being a publicly held team, but it was the GM. And in this situation, you know, you had a bad year. You really don't have a ton of cap space because you got all that money tied up in Peyton. You're going to probably take a pretty big cap hit when he gets cut. And they fired Chris and Bill Poley as if they were the ones that had been the driving force behind that bad contract. It's almost in a way, it's like Jim Irsay is trying to distance himself from this whole debacle. Be like, well, what have you done to my team? And it's kind of like, you know, congressmen that have been in Congress for 30 years and all of a sudden they're throwing their arms up like, you know, these new guys are ruining the country. It's like, okay, you know, you might have had something to do with it. You know, like, let's not pretend like you just let everyone else run things. You know, the Polians were not the ones trying to sign Manning to that deal. You know, that's just not true. And it's funny that they were seemingly scapegoated. They were the ones that were fired, totally out of left field, too. While Irsay, who's the guy that really was the mastermind behind that deal, he hasn't. It's as if he's remiss from anything that's happened. He's not culpable for a single thing that's gone wrong with the Colts, even though I would say probably 75% of their problem right now is his fault.
I very much agree with that. The Polians being fired completely out of left field really kind of set this up for who's going to be the bad guy in this. Because, like you said, they were the ones that kind of had the contract, and now they're out of the way, which I think was actually not a good move by Irsay. If he would have kept the Polians on, they would have been the ones taking the flack for this. They would have been the ones that people were pointing their fingers at and saying, you know, what are you doing with Peyton Manning? And then Irsay would have been in a position to say, well, what are you guys doing with my team? And then he cuts them loose. Cutting them loose as soon as he did, he basically took his shield away. He took his scapegoat away, and now he's taking the flag. I don't know. I don't think that makes him a modest guy. I don't think that, you know, I don't think if he tries to spin it and say, well, I want to own up to this, this, and that, because he's not really doing that. So, he's going to be the bad guy in this. He deserves to be the bad guy in this. Peyton Manning isn't absolved of all the problems that are being caused here, but you do have to look at it from his situation and say, the team that has been in place for the majority of the Peyton Manning era is now gone. So what kind of message does that send to Peyton Manning when Irsay fires everybody that basically you were hand-in-hand helping build this franchise? So I think a lot of angst is going to start there as well.
And I feel like he really, in some senses, and like we talked about earlier in this podcast, it's a business. But in some senses, the way that he pulled the plug on the Polian era, you know, as the general manager. Bill Polian built in those teams. Bill Polian has been a great general manager over the course of his NFL career. He's a Hall of Famer. And at the point that he pulled the plug, right at the worst moment that Indy has had in over a decade, he pulls the plug on the Polian era. And it's like, oh, you slipped. And that's seemingly the sentiment that they left with and has been written about. That is, oh, well, the Polian slipped, and that's why the Colts are in this predicament. And I don't necessarily know that I totally agree with that, you know? It's beginning to look as though they were dealing with a meddlesome owner who scapegoated them as soon as some of his own decisions didn't pan out. I don't mean to dump on Jim Irsay, but, you know, at the same time, that's one thing I have yet to hear single person say throughout this entire ordeal is that, you know, Jim Irsay is every bit as culpable as anyone else in this situation, if not more so, and he deserves to have a lot of the blame placed on his neck, just like, well, that's a bad pun, but, you know, Peyton.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's a messy situation. I'm really glad that we don't have to deal with that here in Tampa. Although, you know, who knows what the future can hold with the Glazers and their business decisions. Hopefully it doesn't get as bad as what it is in Indy. But right now, Irsay is the Dan Gilbert of the NFL. And if anybody knows who Dan Gilbert is, you don't want to be him right now.
What you just said there, though, Josh, I'm glad we're not dealing with that in Tampa. There's probably fans jumping off bridges in Indy right now. They're like, you know what? The Bucks don't even have it this bad. That's a pretty low place to fall to.
Well, maybe it's a defense mechanism for myself. I don't know. Maybe that's keeping me off the bridge. Let's segue into some Peyton Manning talk. I wanted to end the show with this, but we can end the show on, with talking about some Hall of Famers that are going to be in Canton this summer. Peyton Manning watch 2012. Where is he going to go? Because that's going to be the discussion in the coming weeks. It's already been the discussion. I don't want to say it dominated the Super Bowl coverage, because to me it really didn't. To me, I kind of took the Peyton Manning situation with a grain of salt and said, you know what, sit here in the corner, we'll deal with you in a second. Let's watch the football game right now. And now that that's over, I think we can fully turn our attention back to Peyton Manning, because that's going to be the biggest story in the NFL heading into the postseason, or into the offseason, because you could have one of the best quarterbacks in NFL history potentially on a new football team in a new uniform come next September. And that's really going to be the topic of discussion. So where is he going to land is now where we need to move to. I don't think he stays in Indianapolis, but of course that could be the thing that ends up happening. Everybody hypes up, oh, he's going here. The sources come out, ooh, my sources say that he's about to sign here, and then all of a sudden he signs back in Indianapolis. So let's just take a few seconds here to, like we did with the coaching search, kind of throw out a few names and see what we think are the possibilities of Peyton Manning landing there. The first of which being the Tennessee Titans, who have come out in the recent days and said that they're going to try to cool down Peyton fever in Tennessee because they're very, very happy with the situation they have. What do you think of Peyton in Tennessee?
Well, I was just going to say the same thing. I would be really, really surprised if he ends up in Tennessee. You have kind of your placeholder quarterback there right now, is Matt Hasselbeck, and he's not fantastic, but there's nothing wrong with him, especially if he's just getting the seat warm for Jake Locker, who's supposed to be up next. They've got money invested in Locker. They haven't really gotten to see what he's capable of yet. I just don't think that's a good fit. I think Peyton's going to look to go to some place that he can stay for 3-4 years and finish out his career. And if he's in Tennessee with a first-round rookie sitting behind him, the second there's an issue, you know, the second something comes up, even if he's not ready, he's playing well, but the Titans are just ready to go a new direction, he's going to be looking at another change of scenery pretty soon. I don't think that's a good fit at all. I think they're smart to try to, you know, calm down some of the fan base and say, no, we've got a plan in place and we're sticking to it. And, you know, I don't know if that plan will be correct or not, but I just don't think Tennessee is an ideal landing spot for him.
What about, we talked about Miami in the past shows, and so we've done that one. What about the Minnesota Vikings? They usually like to have Band-Aid quarterbacks. There's a lot of turmoil in the fan base right now because nobody, it seems, is satisfied with Christian Ponder, which is beyond you and me. Joe Webb isn't the guy of the future. For a franchise that loves to get veteran Band-Aid quarterbacks, do you see the Vikings making a play at Peyton Manning?
It's like I told you last time. If Vikings fans want to see Joe Webb, then that's the quarterback they deserve to have start for their team, and they can have fun going 4-12, and, you know, then they'll be having a conversation about who's going to be their quarterback again next year. That's the one that I think Joe Webb is not the answer. Whether or not Christian Ponder is the guy, he's the quarterback you picked. He's the guy you invested in. I know probably the real impetus behind that feeling in Minnesota is the fact that you got to support the guy. He's had, you know, less than a full season to be your quarterback. It's not like you had a loaded cupboard for him to go to. I think that you got to be patient in Minnesota, and I think that the people running that team are smart enough to realize that, you know, you just did that with Brett Favre, you know, and here you are again after Favre leaves. and you're up a creek without a paddle because you weren't doing anything to address the quarterback position. You just had a stopgap in there. I don't think that they want to make that mistake right away again. So I would be a little bit surprised if he ends up in Minnesota, and I honestly just don't see what the draw would be for Peyton to continue his career there. I think if his choices were Tennessee and Minnesota, he might pick Tennessee because he went to college there, but you know, outside of that, I think he might pick retirement. You know, I don't know that either of those are really worth him risking injury to his neck and you know, putting his legacy on the line so that he can just get another season or two.
Well, we all saw how well that worked out for Brett Favre, and really right now the Minnesota Vikings have about as good of an offensive line as the Buccaneers have. Where there's actually, I think the Buccaneers might have a better offensive line than the Vikings, which says a whole lot about how bad the Vikings' offensive line is. And like you said, with the neck injury and the Vikings really kind of moving into rebuilding mode, I don't think that's a good fit for Peyton. But then again, the Vikings love their Band-Aid quarterbacks, and we saw what they did to get Donovan McNabb and all the way back to Jim McMahon. Yeah, so who knows how that could work out in Minnesota. Another name on the list is the Denver Broncos. And this is an interesting one because I've heard this one kicked around. John Elway, we all know, not satisfied with Tim Tebow. He doesn't like him, doesn't want him to be his quarterback, and is really bugged by the fact that Tebow has had so much success in Denver. Do the Broncos bring Peyton Manning in to maybe use it as a mask to say he's going to mentor Tebow, but really he's kind of Tebow's replacement as they move forward with someone else?
Go any of these places. I don't think he goes to Denver for two reasons. I think they do ultimately want to try to move away from Tebow down the line, but after Tebow just took them from a losing record to the playoffs and won them a game over the Steelers, you just can't do that right now. I mean, that's unfortunate, but you really, there's tough to justify that to your fan base who's in love with Tebow and say, hey, we're going to remove this guy from playing quarterback even though he got us the playoffs. So I think that's difficult. The other thing, and somebody will disagree with me on this, but I've always felt that John Elway has one of the biggest egos known to mankind, and the idea that he would want to bring a quarterback that could challenge his own legacy in Denver to the Broncos, I just don't necessarily know. I mean, you might want to draft that guy so that he could help his own legacy, and he can say, look, I can even pick great quarterbacks in the draft, and I can develop them. But I don't think he wants to bring a proven commodity who Peyton, with that run game and that defense, could win a couple Super Bowls in Denver. I don't think he would want to do that and get upstaged by Peyton Manning, which I think he is petty enough to worry about. And I know that everyone's going to say, oh, John Elway, great guy. John Elway is not a great guy. John Elway is petty. He is egotistical. He is a narcissist. And I have a feeling that would be a calculation for him. So I just don't think Denver would be a good landing spot for Peyton.
Another landing spot is the Washington Redskins. Daniel Snyder loves to overpay veterans who are over the hill and towards the end of their careers. Peyton could probably make back his $28 million bonus in Washington. And who knows, it could actually make the Redskins good for a year. What do you think about Peyton Manning joining up with Raheem Morris in Washington?
I think that actually is an intriguing possibility. I mean, obviously you still have Mike Shanahan there. You know, I think Shanahan's the kind of coach that Peyton could see himself playing for. He certainly would be supported. He'd get a nice contract from the owner. He'd be the biggest thing to come to the Redskins in quite some time, so obviously the fans would come out for that. I think that would be probably isn't really high up on the radar right now, but I think that could be one of those surprising spots that Peyton could end up.
What about the Dallas Cowboys, another NFC East team? Jerry Jones hasn't really had a whole lot of success with Tony Romo. He's in the Eli Manning category that Eli was in before this season of, is he an elite quarterback or is he just a really, really good so-so quarterback? Do you see maybe the Cowboys moving Tony Romo, bringing in Peyton Manning, and then using the Cleveland, maybe trade Romo to Cleveland for a first-round pick, take Robert Griffin III, and then bringing over Peyton to kind of serve as the stopgap?
I don't see that happening. I really don't. I mean, you know, it's an intriguing idea, but there's a lot of things that would have to happen there. I don't think Peyton wants to sign on somewhere that they're going to be drafting a first-round quarterback and grooming him. I think that that's obviously kind of a hot topic in Indy. I don't know that he's going to want to jump into another situation like that. And I just don't think that Dallas is going to be all that. As much as fans in Dallas are down on Tony Romo. I don't know that Jerry Jones is necessarily down on Tony Romo. I think he's smart enough to realize this is the best thing we've had going at quarterback in the franchise for a couple decades since Aikman left. So, you know, I think that maybe you'll see probably a cooler head prevail there. I don't think Jerry Jones will get involved in that sweepstakes.
Finally, the last team on the list, we know them very well, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Just because, let's get it all out on the table right now. Does Peyton Manning come to Tampa to serve as a mentor to Josh Freeman, kind of serve as a surrogate offensive coordinator since Tampa might not get a good one, or should everybody just stop this fantasy right now because, like I believe, it will only happen if the universe combusts upon itself?
I don't see that happening. I mean, unless Peyton wants to have his middle name become Lookout while he's playing for the Bucs, I don't think that that's really a good fit for him. They have a franchise quarterback and Freeman already in place. Could I see the ownership doing something stupid like that? Absolutely. You know, I absolutely could see them doing that, and I would it wouldn't shock me at all. But it would be the wrong move. I don't think that's... You know, that's not a good fit. You've got a young team. You're trying to build a certain core. You know, you've got a group together that you're hoping are going to stay together for a while. There's no point in, you know, rocking the boat too much, bringing in a veteran quarterback to replace a guy that has shown plenty of promise to begin with. I mean, you know, it's not as if Josh Freeman has had two bad years in a row. Josh Freeman had a down year this year. He had a fantastic year last year. So, you know, you've seen both out of him. He's capable of both. I don't know that you're ready to pull the plug on that quite yet, and I think bringing Peyton Manning in, as nice as that seems like it would be, you know, it's just not a good fit.
So that's this week's Peyton Watch 2012. Where is he going to land?
You left off one.
What's that?
You left off a team. You left off where I think he actually will end up next year.
Where do you think he's going to end up, Patrick?
I think he ends up in New York with the Jets.
Oh, intriguing. Please, sell me on this Peyton to New York, because you sold me on Chudzinski, although it didn't happen, but you did sell me on Chudzinski. Why does Peyton Manning end up in New York? Because that's actually a very intriguing idea.
Well, you know, everyone's going to want to go to the flashy stuff. Oh, it's Peyton and Eli as the two big quarterbacks in New York. That won't have anything to do with it. So the Jets are very close. The Jets are a very good team. And quite frankly, this year, they were disappointing. They didn't play up to the level of their potential. But they've been in the AFC Championship games. They have an exceptional defense. They can run the football well. The only thing the Jets don't have right now is a quarterback. Mark Sanchez, he could turn into a good quarterback, but so far he has been the biggest hindrance to the Jets of anybody on that team. I mean, he has held them back. He's had some good playoff runs, and then somebody's going to say, oh, well, look what he's done in the playoffs. That's fantastic. Not once have I seen Mark Sanchez put a team on his back and just win a game. That's the difference between him and Peyton. I think that, you know, it's obviously a high-pressure market in New York. They're already calling for Sanchez to be done anyway. Rex Ryan knows very well that if he doesn't make some noise this year, he's out because they were disappointed in him this year. So I really do think that that would be the kind of move that New York could make. Immediately become a true Super Bowl contender. Compete with the Patriots, and that's obviously going to be something that I think Manning would like to do, is get into a division with Tom Brady so he gets the matchup with him twice a year. And, you know, it would be an opportunity for Peyton to, if he feels he's still got it, recapture something in his career and make a second kind of statement, and in the Big Apple, no less. I think that that would be, in my opinion, the top spot that he would end up is in New York. And I personally hope that doesn't happen, because I would hate to see Peyton finish his career in Jets colors, but... At the same time, there's plenty of good pieces there for him. There's a need there. It's a team that clearly is going to be willing to go out and make that splashy kind of acquisition. And, you know, I think Peyton is competitive enough that he wants to get another one to match his brother. I think he's always felt like he was in competition with Tom Brady, so he'd like to get a couple more Super Bowl trips so that he can, you know, compete with Brady. I don't think that from a competitive standpoint he's done, and I think the Jets put him in the best situation to be successful.
That's a very intriguing possibility, and I think that's going to be something that gets a lot of traction in the coming weeks, especially moving into an offseason where, like you said, the Jets, now I've watched the Giants win two Super Bowls, and if you know Jets fans, they're not very happy about that, especially with Sanchez being as iffy as he is right now. My only problem with Peyton going to New York would be just, I don't know if he can really make the receivers there that they have into the type of things that can help them win. They have Plaxico Burress. They have Santonio Holmes. Who knows what the situation with Holmes is? He has that giant contract, but he's, you know, kicking up a lot of dirt, and he's really kind of making himself a cancer in that locker room. That would be my only problem, my only hang-up with that. But Peyton Manning, like we've discussed every time we discuss him, possibly one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game. I think that would only add to his legacy to say he went to a place that didn't have a lot of elite receivers, a lot of elite offensive pieces around him, and they turned he turned them into a winner. I think that would only, you know, boost his status as a legend. And plus, he does it in New York. You know, the Joe Namath history there. They move on, and then Peyton Manning comes there at the end of his career, does a whole lot of good there. I can see that working. And Rex Ryan is the type of coach, like you said, knows he's on the way out unless he starts to do something. And every quarterback that Rex Ryan gets, I think Rex Ryan would be in love with. He could have Rex Grossman, and you could see Rex Ryan out there at the podium every Sunday talking about how good of a quarterback he has in Rex Grossman. So if he does get Peyton Manning, I do think that buys him a little bit of time. And that is an intriguing possibility. Do you think that Peyton would be able to do it with the receivers that New York has, or would Peyton coming to New York then bring receivers into New York?
I'm glad you came back to the receivers point, because, you know, obviously people point back to Harrison and Wayne in Indianapolis, but, you know, a few years ago, no one had ever heard of Austin Collie. No one had ever heard of Pierre Garçon. He made Ben Utecht into a good tight end when Dallas Clark went down for a year. I mean, Peyton Manning can make somebody out of nobody. I mean, you know, that's always been something he's capable of doing. Everyone wants to point to Brady and say he's the guy that makes receivers out of nothing. Manning's capable of doing that too. I mean, he throws a good enough ball that as long as you can run a slant route and catch, you can have a 1,000-yard season. So, you know, I think that's worth noting. Another thing too is Santonio Holmes, who I wouldn't want in my locker room, but he's signed a big money. He's going to be back in New York. I think he's a team captain even. You know, as terrible as this sounds, Marvin Harrison probably killed a guy. And while he was in Indianapolis with Peyton, he was doing Got Milk commercials. Everyone thought he was the nicest guy in the world. As soon as Peyton leaves, he just goes off there. As soon as he leaves, he just goes off the deep end. He's not around Peyton. So I think Peyton can get receivers to behave. That's my only point. You know, Marvin Harrison clearly had some issues going on, but that was never a problem when Peyton was around. So, you know, I think that he could probably get Santonio Holmes to iron it out. And plus, there's a big difference when Mark Sanchez tells you to shut up and Peyton Manning tells you to shut up. And if Santonio Holmes doesn't know that difference, he should be out of the league.
We talked about this when we were talking about Raheem Morris, and one of his problems was that he was trying to be too much of one of the guys in the locker room. And I really think that Rex Ryan is that type of guy where he wants to be one of the boys. I think he got new tattoos or something on his leg or something to try to fit in with the guys in his locker room. I think bringing in Peyton Manning would be a balance to Rex Ryan's one of the guys' attitude. Do you think that Manning would be able to do that? Because like you said, if Peyton Manning tells you to shut up, you shut up.
I think Rex Ryan, it's an evolution in progress. I mean, he's not the coach he was a few years ago. He's learned some things already. I think that Rex Ryan's the kind of guy that he makes very public mistakes. He misspeaks. He says things he shouldn't say. You know, he does things he shouldn't do. But I don't think that you can say that he makes the same mistakes necessarily over and over again. I don't like Rex Ryan, but I think he's good for football. I think he's a good coach. Even if sometimes, I do agree that he does have a tendency to maybe want to be too collegial with his own players as opposed to being an authority figure, I still think that what he brings to the table, it's what we kind of hoped Raheem Morris was going to be. I mean, he still has the ability to get his team rallied and behind him and motivated in a way that few coaches do. And you look at the way that they made those two AFC championship games under him. At one point in each of those two seasons, just like this year, somebody said, this team is dead in the water. The Jets are dead in the water. They're not going anywhere. They're not even a playoff team. And then they ended up getting together. They got hot, just like the Giants. They won it all this year. They came together. They proved that they were a very, very good team, and they were close. I think that he still has the ability to get the best out of his players. I just think that he's growing up as a head coach, and some of that is learning when to shut up and when not to, when to keep the decorum up, in a press conference, in a locker room meeting. I mean, I think he's just learning when things are appropriate and when things aren't. So I don't know that necessarily Peyton would have any impact on that. I think think that really he'd probably just leave Peyton Manning alone, considering that he's more just interested in what the defense is doing, and he's going to let his offensive assistants go ahead and take care of that. But, yeah, I don't think that would be – I don't think it would be an issue for Peyton playing under Rex Ryan. I think it would definitely be an interesting change for playing under Caldwell and Dungy.
So New York, very interesting landing spot for Peyton Manning. We'll see where that one goes in the coming weeks, because Peyton fever is only going to take off and get more hype as the days continue. And now that we have no football to talk about, all there is to talk about is where Peyton Manning's going to go. He's Patrick Nohy. I'm Josh Hill, both from theputerplank.com. You're listening to PewterPlank Radio Network. Up next, Patrick and myself want to be breaking down the year-end awards, the MVP, Rookie of the Year, all that good stuff, as well as the ultimate year-end award, the end-of-career award every player strives for, the Hall of Fame induction, who's going to be inducted as a Hall of Fame class of 2012. We will break that down. And also, an NFL star retires. What is he going to be remembered more for, passing? The potential passing that he could have done, or the actual passing that he did. We'll talk about him. Actually, I guess you're going to have to download the next show. But if you're listening here, up next we talk about all of that and more. It's the Pewter Plank Radio Network.